The young man came to the old man seeking counsel. "I broke something, old man." "How badly is it broken?" "It's in a million little pieces." "I'm afraid I can't help you."
"Why?"
"There's nothing you can do."
"Why?"
"It can't be fixed."
"Why?"
"It's broken beyond repair. It's in a million little pieces."
A Million Little Pieces by James Fry. Read for you by Oliver Wyman.
I wake to the drone of an airplane engine and the feeling of something warm dripping down my chin. I lift my hand to feel my face. My front four teeth are gone. I have a hole in my cheek. My nose is broken and my eyes are swollen nearly shut. I open them and I look around, and I'm in the back of a plane and there's no one near me. I look at my clothes and my clothes are covered with a colorful mixture of spit, snot, urine, vomit, and blood. I reach for the call button and I find it and I push it and I wait, and 30 seconds later an attendant arrives. "How can I help you? Where am I going?"
"You don't know?"
"No."
"You're going to Chicago, sir."
"How did I get here?"
"A doctor and two men brought you on. They talked to the captain, sir. We were told to let you sleep."
"How long till we land?"
"About 20 minutes.
"Thank you."
Although I never look up, I know she smiles and feels sorry for me.
She shouldn't.
A short while later, we touch down. I look around for anything I might have with me, but there's nothing. No ticket, no bags, no clothes, no wallet. I sit and I wait, and I try to figure out what happened. Nothing comes. Once the rest of the passengers are gone, I stand and start to make my way to the door. After about 5 steps, I sit back down. Walking is out of the question. I see my attendant friend, and I raise a hand. "Are you okay?"
"No."
"What's wrong?"
"I can't really walk."
"If you make it to the door, I can get you a chair."
"How far is the door?"
"Not far."
I stand. I wobble. I sit back down. I stare at the floor and take a deep breath.
"You'll be all right."
I look up and she's smiling.
"Here."
She holds out her hand and I take it. I stand and I lean against her and she helps me down the aisle. We get to the door.
"I'll be right back."
I let go of her hand and I sit down on the steel bridge of the jetway that connects the plane to the gate.
"I'm not going anywhere."
She laughs, and I watch her walk away, and I close my eyes. My head hurts, my mouth hurts, my eyes hurt, my hands hurt. Things without names hurt. I rub my stomach. I can feel it coming. Fast and strong and burning. No way to stop it. Just close your eyes and let it ride. It comes, and I recoil from the stench and the pain. There's nothing I can do. Oh my God. I open my eyes. I'm all right. Let me find a doctor.
I'll be fine.
Just get me out of here.
Can you stand?
Yeah, I can stand. I stand and I brush myself off and I wipe my hands on the floor and I sit down in the wheelchair she has brought me. She goes around to the back of the chair and she starts pushing.
Is someone here for you?
I hope so.
You don't know?
No.
What if no one's there?
It's happened before. I'll find my way. We come off the jetway and into the gate. Before I have a chance to look around,
My mother and father are standing in front of me. Oh, Jesus. Please, Mom. Oh, my God, what happened? I don't want to talk about it, Mom. Jesus Christ, Jimmy, what in hell happened? She leans over and she tries to hug me. I push her away. Let's just get out of here, Mom. My dad goes around to the back of the chair. I look for the attendant, but she has disappeared. Bless her. You okay, James? I stare straight ahead. No, Dad, I'm not okay. He starts pushing the chair. Do you have any bags? My mother continues crying. No. People are staring. Do you need anything? I need to get out of here, Dad. Just get me the fuck out of here. They wheel me to their car. I climb in the back seat and I take off my shirt and I lie down. My dad starts driving. My mom keeps crying. I fall asleep. About 4 hours later, I wake up. My head is clear, but everything throbs. I sit forward and I look out the window. We've pulled into a filling station somewhere in Wisconsin. There's no snow on the ground, but I can feel the cold. My dad opens the driver's door and he sits down and he closes the door. I shiver. You're awake. Yeah. How are you feeling? Shitty. Your mom's inside cleaning up and getting supplies. You need anything? A bottle of water and a couple of bottles of wine, a pack of cigarettes? Seriously? Yeah. This is bad, James. I need it. You can't wait. No. This will upset your mother. I don't care. I need it. He opens the door and he goes into the filling station. I lie back down and I stare at the ceiling. I can feel my heart quickening and I hold out my hand and I try to keep it straight. I hope they hurry. 20 minutes later, the bottles are gone. I sit up and I light a smoke and I take a slug of water. Mom turns around. Better? If you want to put it that way. We're going up to the cabin. I figured. We're going to decide what to do when we get there. All right. What do you think? I don't want to think right now. You're going to have to soon. Then I'll wait till soon comes. We head north to the cabin. Along the way, I learn that my parents, who live in Tokyo, have been in the States for the last 2 weeks on business. At 4 a.m., they received a call from a friend of mine who was with me at a hospital and had tracked them down in a hotel in Michigan. He told them that I had fallen face first down a fire escape and that he thought they should find me some help. He didn't know what I was on, but he knew there was a lot of it. And he knew it was bad. They had driven to Chicago during the night. So what was it? What was what? What were you taking? I'm not sure. How can you not be sure? I don't remember. What do you remember? Bits and pieces. Like what? I don't remember. We drive on, and after a few hard, silent minutes, we arrive. We get out of the car, and we go into the house, and I take a shower because I need it. When I get out, there are some fresh clothes sitting on my bed. I put them on, and I go to my parents' room. They are up drinking coffee and talking, but when I come in, they stop. Hi. Mom starts crying again and she looks away. Dad looks at me. Feeling better? No. You should get some sleep. I'm gonna. Good. I look at my mom. She can't look back. I breathe. I look away. I look away. I can't look at them. I just wanted to say thanks for picking me up. Dad smiles. He takes my mother by the hand and they stand. They come over to me and they give me a hug. I don't like it when they touch me, so I pull away. Good night. Good night, James. We love you. I turn and I leave their room and I close their door and I go to the kitchen. I look through the cabinets and I find an unopened gallon bottle of whiskey. The first sip brings my stomach back up, but after that it's all right. I go to my room and I drink and I smoke some cigarettes and I think about her. I drink and I smoke and I think about her. And at a certain point, blackness comes and my memory fails me. Back in the car with a headache and bad breath, we're heading north and west to Minnesota. My father made some calls and got me into a clinic, but I don't have any other options, so I agree to spend some time there, and for now I'm fine with it. It's getting colder. My face has gotten worse. It is hideously swollen. I have trouble speaking, eating, drinking, smoking. I have yet to look in a mirror. We stop in Minneapolis to see my older brother. He moved there after getting divorced, and he knows how to get to the clinic. He sits with me in the back seat, and he holds my hand, and it helps, because I'm scared. We pull into the parking lot and park the car, and I finish a bottle. We get out, and we start walking toward the entrance of the clinic. Me and my brother and my mother and my father, my entire family, going to the clinic. I stop, and they stop with me. I stare at the buildings, low and long and connected. Functional, simple, menacing. I want to run or die or get fucked up. I want to be blind and dumb and have no heart. I want to crawl in a hole and never come out. I want to wipe my existence straight off the map. Straight off the fucking map. I take a deep breath. Let's go. We enter a small waiting room. A woman sits behind a desk reading a fashion magazine. She looks up. May I help you? My father steps forward and speaks with her as my mother and brother and I find chairs and sit in them. I'm shaking. My hands and my feet and my lips and my chest shaking. For any number of reasons. Mother and brother move next to me and they take my hands and they hold them. And they can feel what is happening to me. We look at the floor and we don't speak. We wait and we hold hands and we breathe and we think. My father finishes with the woman and he turns around and he stands in front of us. He looks happy, and the woman is on the phone. He kneels down. They're gonna check you in now. All right. You're gonna be fine. This is a good place. The best place. That's what I hear. You ready? I guess so. We stand and we move toward a small room where a man sits behind a desk. I'm sorry, but you have to leave him here. I turn and they hug me. One at a time and hold tight. Squeezing and holding, I show them what I can. I turn and without a word I walk into the room and the man shuts the door and they're gone. The man shows me a chair and returns to his desk. He smiles. You're going to stay with us for a while. You okay with that? For now. We are the oldest residential drug and alcohol treatment facility in the world. We were founded in 1949. We have the highest success rate of any facility in the world. We believe that patients should stay here for as long a term as they need. not something as specific as a 28-day program. You should consider yourself fortunate to be here, and you should be excited to start a new chapter in your life. I stare at the man. I don't speak. He stares back at me, waiting for me to say something. There is an awkward moment. He smiles. You ready to get started? I don't smile. Sure. He gets up and I get up and we walk down a hall. The doors are always open here, so if you want to leave, you can. Substance use is not allowed, and if you're caught using or possessing, you will be sent home. You are not allowed to say anything more than hello to any women aside from doctors, nurses, or staff members. If you violate this rule, you will be sent home. There are other rules, but those are the only ones you need to know right now. We walk through a door into the medical wing. There are small rooms and doctors and nurses and a pharmacy. The cabinets have large steel locks. The man shows me to a room. He leaves and shuts the door. The door opens and a nurse walks in. Hi, James.
Hi.
I need to ask you some questions.
All right.
What type of substances do you normally use?
Alcohol.
Every day?
Yes.
What time do you start drinking?
When I wake up.
She marks it down. How much per day?
As much as I can.
How much is that?
Enough to make myself look like I do.
She looks at me. She marks it down. Do you use anything else?
Cocaine.
How often?
Every day.
She marks it down.
How much?
As much as I can.
She marks it down.
In what form?
Lately, crack, but over the years in every form that it exists.
She marks it down. Anything else?
Pills, acid, mushrooms, meth, PCP and glue.
Marks it down. How often?
When I have it.
How often?
A few times a week.
Marks it down. She moves forward and draws out a stethoscope. How are you feeling?
Terrible.
In what way?
In every way.
She reaches for my shirt.
Do you mind?
No. She lifts my shirt and she puts the stethoscope to my chest. She listens. Breathe deeply. She listens. Good. Do it again. She lowers my shirt and she pulls away, and she marks it down. Thank you. I smile. Are you cold?
Yes.
She has a blood pressure gauge. Do you feel nauseous?
Yes.
She straps it on my arm and it hurts. When was the last time you used?
She pumps it up.
A little while ago. What and how much?
Drank a bottle of vodka.
How does that compare to your normal daily dosage?
It doesn't.
She watches the gauge and the dials move, and she marks it down, and she removes the gauge. I'm gonna leave for a little while, but I'll be back. I stare at the wall. We need to monitor you carefully, and we will probably need to give you some detoxification drugs. I see a shadow, and I think it moves, but I'm not sure. You're fine right now, but I think you'll start to feel some things. I see another one. I hate it. If you need me, just call. I hate it. She stands up and she smiles, and she puts the chair back and she leaves. I take off my shoes and I lie under the blankets and I close my eyes and I fall asleep. I wake and I start to shiver, and I curl up and I clench my fists. Sweat runs down my chest, my arms, the backs of my legs. It stings my face. I sit up and I hear someone moan. I see a bug in the corner, but I know it's not there. The walls close in and expand, close in and expand, and I can hear them. I cover my ears, but it's not enough. I stand. I look around me. I don't know anything. Where I am, why, what happened, how to escape, my name, my life. I curl up on the floor, and I am crushed by images and sounds. Things I have never seen or heard or ever knew existed. They come from the ceiling, the door, the window, the desk, the chair, the bed, the closet. Coming from the fucking closet. Dark shadows and bright lights and flashes of blue and yellow and red as deep as the red of my blood. They move toward me and they scream at me and I don't know what they are, but I know they are helping the bugs. They're screaming at me. I start shaking, 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 shaking. My entire body is shaking and my heart is racing and I can see it pounding through my chest and I'm sweating and it stings. The bugs crawl onto my skin and they start biting me and I try to kill them. I claw at my skin, tear at my hair, start biting myself. I don't have any teeth, and I'm biting myself, and there are shadows, and bright lights, and flashes, and screams, and bugs, bugs, bugs. I'm lost. I'm completely fucking lost. I scream. I piss on myself. I shit my pants. The nurse returns, and she calls for help, and the men in white come in, and they put me on the bed, and they hold me there. I try to kill the bugs, but I can't move, so they live. In me. On me. I feel the stethoscope and the gauge, and they stick a needle in my arm, and they hold me down. I am blinded by blackness. I am gone. I sit in the chair by the window, staring. I don't know what I'm staring at, and I don't care. It's dark. It's late, and I can't sleep anymore. The drugs are wearing off. The nurse comes in. Can't sleep? She checks my pressure and pulse. No. We have a lounge. She hands me some pills. You can watch TV. She hands me a robe and slippers. And you can smoke. I turn and I stare out the window. Get changed and let me show you where it is. All right. She leaves and I take the pills and I change and when I open the door, she's waiting for me. She smiles and she hands me a pack of smokes. These all right? I smile. Thank you. We go to the lounge. A television, two couches, an easy chair, some vending machines. The television is on. I sit in the chair. She leaves and I can feel the pills kicking in. I watch television, but nothing registers. I smoke a cigarette. It burns. A man walks in and he walks up to me and he stands in front of me. Hey, buddy. Tracks crisscross his forearms. I'm talking to you. I look in his eyes. They're blank. Hey, asshole. That's my fucking chair. I watch TV, and he's breathing heavy, and the nurse comes in. Is there a problem here? This asshole is in my chair. Then why don't you sit on the couch? Because I don't like the couch. I like the chair. James is in the chair. There's the couch, or the floor, or you can leave. You decide. Fuck James. Make him move. Do you want me to call security? No. Then you decide. He walks to the couch and he sits down on it. The nurse watches him. Thank you. He laughs and she leaves and we're alone and I'm watching television and smoking a cigarette. He stares at me and he chews his nails and he spits them at me, but the pills are in and the bugs are gone and I don't care. Nothing registers. I watch the television. Everything slows down. Slows down beyond recognition. The image blurs. The voices fade. My eyelids fall. I struggle to bring them up, but they won't come. The rest of my body follows my eyes. My muscles go limp and I slide from the chair to the floor. I don't like the floor, and I don't want to be on the floor, but I can't stop myself. As I slide, the surface of the chair holds my robe and scratches the back of my legs, and the robe bunches around my waist. I lift my hand to adjust the robe, and my hand falls back. The man stops spitting his nails at me, and he stands and he walks toward me, and I can see him coming through the slitted lids of my eyes. With each step he takes toward me, the situation becomes more clear in my mind. He can do whatever he wants to me. I am helpless to stop him. Helpless to stop him. Helpless. He stands over me and he stares at me. He leans down and he looks at my face and he laughs. You are one ugly motherfucker. I try to say something back. I can only grunt. I could kick your ass right now if I felt like it. Beat you to a bloody fucking pulp. But all I want is the fucking chair. And I'm gonna fucking take it. He reaches out and he grips my wrists and he drags me along the floor. He drags me away from the chair and into the corner of the room and he leaves me lying face down on the floor. He leans over and he puts his mouth next to my ear. I could have beat your fucking ass. Remember that. He leaves, and I can hear him sit down in the chair and start changing the channels on the television. I am awake, but I'm unable to move. I fade. I fade. I fade. Morning comes, and when I wake, I am able to move, and I stand and I look for the man. He's gone, but my memory isn't, and it won't be for a long time. It has always been a fault of mine. I hold my memory. I go to my room, and when I open the door, I see an orderly setting a tray of food on the desk. He looks at me and he smiles. Good morning. Good morning. I brought you some breakfast. We thought you might be hungry. Thank you. If you want anything else, just call. Thank you. He leaves, and I look at the food. Eggs, bacon, toast, potatoes, a glass of water and a glass of orange juice. I don't want to eat, but I know I should, so I go to the chair and I sit down and I look at the food and then I feel my face. Everything is still swollen. I touch my lips and they crack. I open my mouth and they bleed. I close my mouth and they drip. I don't want to eat, but I know I should. I reach for the glass of water and I take a sip, but it's too cold. I reach for the orange juice and I take a sip, but it burns. I try to use the fork, but it does too much damage. I break up the toast and push the pieces down my throat with my fingers. I do the same with the potatoes and the eggs and the bacon. Drink the water, but not the juice. I lick my fingers clean. When I'm done, I go to the bathroom and I vomit. I try to stop it, but I can't. About half of the food comes up, as does some blood and some bile. I am happy that I have kept half of the food. That is more than I normally keep. As I walk back to my bed, a doctor comes into the room. He smiles. Hi. He's wearing a name tag, but I can't read it. I'm Dr. Baker. We shake hands. I'm going to be working with you today. I sit on the edge of the bed. Are you okay with that? He looks at my face, but not my eyes. Yeah. I look at his eyes. How are you feeling? His eyes are kind. Tired of that question. He laughs. I'll bet you are. I smile. These... He hands me more pills. Are Librium and Diazepam. I take them. They're detoxification drugs, and important medically because they stabilize your heart, keep your blood pressure down, and help ease you through withdrawal. Without them, you could suffer a stroke or a heart attack or both. You'll be taking them every 4 hours in decreasing doses for the next 5 days. I look at his eyes. We're going to take some tests. He's seen this before. And start planning a program for you.
All right. First, though, we need to try and fix you up a bit.
We go to a room. It has bright fluorescent lights and a large surgical bed and boxes of supplies. I sit on the bed and he puts on a pair of latex gloves and he examines my cheek. He picks away the scabs. He opens my mouth. His finger fits through the hole. He gets a needle and some string and tells me to clench my fists and close my eyes. I leave them open and I watch as the needle runs through, inside and out, my cheek, my lip, my mouth, 41 times. We're through and he's on the phone with a surgical dentist and I'm sitting on the bed and I'm shaking from the pain. I can taste heat and the string and the blood. He sets a date and he hangs up the phone and he starts washing his hands. We're going to take you into town in a couple of days and get your teeth fixed. You'll look as good as new. He puts on a new pair of gloves and he turns around. Now I need to check your nose. I take a deep breath. He steps forward and he starts looking at my nose. He touches it and I cringe. I can no longer feel my cheek. This is bad. I know. I'm gonna have to break it and reset it. I know. Sooner the better, but if you want, we can wait. Sooner the better. All right. He spreads his feet and he firms himself and he puts both of his hands on my nose. I grab the sides of the bed and I close my eyes and I wait.
You ready?
Yeah. He jerks his hands forward and up, and there's an audible crack. Cold, white light shoots through my eyes and through my spine and into my feet and back again. My eyes are closed, but I'm crying. Blood is streaming from my nostrils. Now I have to set it. He moves his hands to the side, and I can feel the cartilage move with them. He moves them again. I can feel it. He presses up, and it seems to fit. I can feel it. There. He reaches for some tape, and I open my eyes. He puts the tape across the bridge of my nose, and it holds the cartilage in place. It feels solid. He grabs a towel, and he wipes the blood from my face and my neck, and I stare at the wall. My face is throbbing, and I'm squeezing the sides of the bed, and it hurts my hands. I want to let go, but I can't.
You all right?
No. I can't give you any painkillers. I figured. The Librium and Diazepam will take the edge off, but you're gonna hurt. I know. I'll get you a new robe. Thank you. He steps back and he throws the towel in the garbage can and he leaves. I let go of the bed and I hold my hands in front of my face and I stare at them. They shake. I shake. The doctor comes back with a nurse and they help me change and they tell me about the tests they're going to give me. Blood, urine, stool. They need to know how much damage I've done to my insides. The thought revolts me. We leave and we go to a different room that also has a bathroom. I piss in a cup, shit in a plastic container, take a needle in my arm. It's simple and it's easy and it's painless. We emerge and the unit is busy. Patients wait in line for drugs, doctors go from room to room, nurses carry bottles and tubes. There is noise, but everything is quiet. I go to my room with the doctor and I sit on the bed. He sits in the chair and he writes on a chart. He finishes writing and he looks at me. Except for the dentist, the worst of it is over. All right. I'm going to put you on 250 milligrams of amoxicillin 3 times a day and 500 milligrams of penicillin VK 1 a day. These will prevent any possible infection. All right. Go to the dispensary and they'll give them to you. Or if you forget, a nurse will come find you. Okay. Thank you for dealing this morning. No problem. Good luck.
Thanks. He stands, and I stand, and we shake hands, and he leaves. I go to the dispensary, and I stand in line. A young woman stands in front of me. She turns around, and she looks at my face. She speaks.
Hi.
She smiles.
Hi.
She holds out her hand.
I'm Lily.
I take it. It's soft and warm.
I'm James.
I don't want to let go, but I do. We step forward.
What happened?
She glances toward the dispensary.
I don't remember.
She turns back.
Blacked out?
Yeah. She grimaces.
Shit.
I laugh.
Yeah.
We step forward.
When'd you get here?
I glance toward the dispensary.
Yesterday.
The nurse is glaring.
Me too.
I motion toward the nurse, and Lily turns around and she stops talking, and we step forward and we wait. The nurse glares at us, and she hands Lily some pills and a cup of water, and Lily takes the pills and she drinks the water. She turns around, and as she passes me, she smiles, and she mouths the word, bye. I smile and step forward. The nurse glares at me and asks me my name. James Fry? She looks at a chart, and she goes to a cabinet, and she gets some pills, and she hands them to me with a cup of water. I take the pills. I drink the water. I go to my room, and I fall asleep. And I spend the rest of the day sleeping and shoving food down my throat and waiting in line and taking pills. Sometime the next morning, my door opens and I sit up and the doctor brings in a pile of clothes and my pills and he sets them on the table. I reach for the pills. I take them. We got you some fresh clothes.
Thanks.
He sits at the table. We're going to move you down to a unit today.
All right.
Usually when a patient moves down to a unit, his contact with us is limited, but in your case, we need to continue to see you. For the next week, you'll need to come up here twice a day, after breakfast and dinner, to get your antibiotics and your Librium. What I'm giving you is your last dose of diazepam.
Got it.
He looks at my mouth. We're taking you to a dentist tomorrow. He knows what he's doing, and he's a friend of mine. He'll take good care of you. Stay strong and you'll be fine. You should get changed and go wait in the lounge. They'll send someone up from the unit to get you.
Can't wait.
He laughs and he stands up.
Good luck, James.
I stand. Thank you. We shake hands and he leaves and I change into the clothes he brought me. A pair of khakis, a white t-shirt, some slippers. They're warm and soft and they feel good. I almost feel human. I leave my room and I walk through the medical unit. I walk into the lounge and I sit down on a couch. I'm alone and I watch television and the latest batch of pills kicks in. My heartbeat slows. My hands stop shaking. My eyelids drop. My body is limp. Nothing registers. I hear my name and I look up, and Lily is standing in front of me. She smiles and she sits down next to me.
Remember me?
Lily. She smiles. I wasn't sure you would. You look pretty juiced. Librium and diazepam. Yeah, I just got off it. I hate that shit.
Where are you from?
I reach for my cigarettes.
North Carolina.
I draw one out.
Got one of those for me?
I hand her a cigarette and I light them and we smoke and Lily tells me about herself and I listen to her. She's 22 and grew up in Phoenix. Her father left when she was 4 and her mother was a heroin addict who supported her habit by whoring herself to whoever would pay. She started giving Lily drugs at 10 and started forcing her to whore herself to whoever would pay at 13.
At 17, Lily ran away to her grandmother in Chicago, where she's lived since. She's addicted to crack and Quaaludes. A man walks into the room and we stop talking and the man stops in front of me. He is thin, preppy, nearly bald. He has small, nervous eyes. James? He smiles. Yeah. He seems very happy. Hi, I'm Roy. He holds out his hand. Hi. I stand and I shake his hand. I'm here to take you down to the unit. All right. Do you have any bags? No. Any extra clothes? Books? I have nothing. A DOP kit? Nothing. He smiles again, nervously. Let's go. I turn and I look at Lily, who is pretending to watch television. Bye, Lily. She looks up and she smiles at me. Bye, James. Roy and I leave the lounge and we walk down a short, dark, carpeted hallway. As we walk, Roy watches me carefully. You know that's against the rules. I stare straight ahead. What? Talking to women. Sorry. Don't be sorry, just don't do it again. All right. The rules here are for your own good. I suggest that you follow them. I'll try. Do better than try or you'll be in trouble. I'll try. We come to a large door and we walk through it and everything changes. The hallways are long and lined with doors. The carpets are plush and the walls bright. There is color and light and a feeling of comfort. There are people walking everywhere, and they are all smiling. We walk through a series of corridors. Roy stares at me, and I stare straight ahead. He tells me about the unit and its rules. There are between 20 and 25 men on the unit at any given time. 3 counselors and a unit supervisor. Each man has a counselor who oversees his recovery program, and the unit supervisor oversees them. Each man is required to attend 3 lectures a day, eat 3 meals a day, and participate in all unit activities. Each man has a job that he is required to complete each morning. Mood-altering chemicals are not allowed on the unit. If you are caught using them or possessing them, you will be asked to leave. Mail is passed out once a day. Unit counselors reserve the right to open and search any and all mail. Visitors are allowed on Sundays between 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock. The staff reserves the right to search and examine any gifts or packages that you are given by visitors. The women are housed in separate units and contact with them is not allowed. If you see them in the halls, hello is okay, how are you is not. If you violate this rule, you may be asked to leave. Roy stares at me. The rules are serious business. If you want to recover, I'd recommend following them. I stare straight ahead. I'll try. We walk through a door marked Sawyer and we enter the unit. We walk down a hall with doors on both sides. Some of the doors have names on them and some of them are open. I can see men in the rooms. We leave the hall and enter a large open room with 2 levels. On the upper level there is a soda machine, a candy machine, a large coffee pot, a kitchen, and a large table surrounded by chairs. On the lower level there are couches and chairs arranged in a circle, a television, and a blackboard. Against the far wall there is a telephone booth, and there are large sliding glass doors built into 2 of the other walls. The doors open onto large expanses of grass and trees. In the distance, I can see a lake. Men sit at the tables and on the couches. They're reading, talking, smoking cigarettes, and drinking coffee. When I enter the room, they all turn toward me and they stare at me. Roy smiles. Welcome to Sawyer. Thanks. It's a good place. I want to leave. You'll get better here.
run away. Trust me, I know. Get fucked up.
Yeah.
Die.
Let's go to your room.
We walk from the upper level of the room to a hall off its far end. We stop at a door and Roy opens the door and we enter the room. The room is fairly large and contains four beds, one in each of the corners. Next to each bed is a small nightstand and a small dresser. A bathroom is off to one side. There are two men sitting on one of the beds playing cards, and they both look up when we enter.
Larry? Warren? This is James.
The men stand and they walk over to where I am standing and they introduce themselves. Larry is short and powerful looking, built like the butt of a sledgehammer. He has long brown hair and a thick beard and a southern accent. He looks as if he's about 35. Warren is in his 50s, and he is tall and thin and tan and well-dressed, and he has a large smile. We shake hands, and they ask where I'm from, and I tell them. They ask if I want to play cards, and I say no. I tell them I'm tired and I want to rest, and I thank Roy, and I walk over to the empty bed, and I lie down. Roy leaves, and Larry and Warren go back to their cards. I close my eyes, and I take a deep breath, and I think about my life and how I ended up this way. I think about the ruin, devastation, and wreckage I have caused to myself and to others. I think about self-hatred and self-loathing. I think about how and why and what happened, and thoughts come easily, but the answers don't. I hear footsteps, feel a presence. I open my eyes and there's a man standing over me. He's in his 30s, medium height and thin like a reed, with long bony arms and delicate hands. He's clean cut, short hair, clean shave.
You're new.
He's nervous and hyper.
Yeah.
And his eyes are empty.
What's your name?
James. I sit up.
I'm John.
He sits on the edge of the bed and he hands me a card.
That's my card.
I read it. It says John Everett, Sexual Ninja, San Francisco and the World. I laugh.
Want to see something?
He reaches for his wallet.
Sure.
He opens it and he draws out a faded newspaper article and he hands it to me. The article is old and from the San Francisco Chronicle. It has a picture of a man standing in the middle of a street holding a sign. The headline reads, Man arrested on Market Street with sign reading Cocaine for Sale 3 hours after being released from San Quentin.
That's me.
I laugh again. I went back for 3 more years. I hand him the article.
That sucks.
He pockets it.
You ever fuck anybody in the ass?
What?
You ever fuck anybody in the ass?
What are you talking about?
I got into it in prison and now I'm addicted to it. That and rock cocaine. I thought you should know right off the bat.
I stare at him.
Honesty and openness are very important here. They're part of the program and since I'm working the program, I wanted to tell you. Is that okay?
I stare hard. It's fine. He gets nervous, stands, looks at his watch.
It's time for lunch. You want me to show you the dining hall?
I stand without a word. I just stare. We leave and we make our way through the unit and down another series of halls. We enter a long hall with glass walls on either side of it. In one of the sections, women sit eating their lunches. In the other sit the men. At the end of the hall is a common area with a salad bar and two cafeteria-style lines where food is served. John grabs 2 trays, hands one of them to me, and we get in line. As we move forward, I take in my surroundings. There are men and women. There is food. There is talking, but there are no smiles. There are round tables surrounded by 8 chairs. There are people sitting in the chairs. There are plates and glasses and trays on the tables. There are about 125 men in the male section spread among tables that probably hold 200,
There are about 100 women in the female section spread among tables that hold about 150. I get a bowl of soup and a glass of water, and as I walk through the room I can feel people staring at me. I can only imagine what I must look like. I find an empty table and I sit down and I'm alone. I take a sip of the water and I begin spooning the soup into my mouth. It's hot, and each spoonful shoots a wave of pain through my lips, my cheek, my gums, and my teeth. I eat slowly and deliberately and I never look up. I don't want to see anybody and I don't want anybody seeing me. I walk back to the unit. As I pass an open door, someone calls my name. I stop and I go back to the door and a man stands and he comes from behind a desk and he walks toward me. He's in his early 30s. He's very tall and very thin. He has dark hair pulled into a small ponytail and he wears round black glasses. He's dressed in a black t-shirt, black pants, and black tennis shoes. He looks like a grown-up version of a kid who spent his childhood sitting behind a computer and hiding from bullies. "You're James." He reaches out to shake my hand. We shake. "I'm Ken, your unit recovery counselor. Nice to meet you." He turns and he walks toward his desk. "Come in and sit down." I follow him in and I sit down in a chair across from him. He reaches for a file and he sets it on his desk and he opens it and he looks at me. "Anything we can do to make you more comfortable?" "No." "We need some more information to round out our file. Do you mind answering a few questions?" "No." He picks up a pen. "When did you start using drugs and alcohol?"
"I started drinking at 10, doing drugs at 12.
"And when did you start using heavily?"
"At 15, I was drinking every day. At 18, I was drinking and doing drugs every day. It's gotten much, much heavier since then."
"Do you black out?"
"Yes."
"How often?"
"Every day."
"How long has this been happening?"
4 years or 5 years.
"Do you get sick?"
"Every day."
"How often?"
"When I wake up, when I have my first drink, when I have my first meal, and a few more times after that."
"How many times is a few?"
"Anywhere from 3 to 7.
"How long has this been happening?"
4 or 5 years.
"Do you ever contemplate suicide?"
"Yes."
"Have you ever tried it?"
"No."
"Have you ever been arrested?"
"Yes."
"How many times?"
12 or 13.
"For what?"
"All kinds of shit."
"Such as?"
"Possession, possession with intent to distribute, 3 DUIs, bunch of vandalism, destruction of property charges, assault, assault with a deadly weapon, assaulting an officer of the law, public drunkenness, disturbing the peace. I'm sure there's some other shit, but I don't remember exactly what."
"Are any of the charges still outstanding?"
"Most of them."
"Where?"
"Michigan, Ohio, and North Carolina."
"Have you been going to court?"
"No."
"Are you out on bail?"
"I skip bail."
"Where?"
"Everywhere."
"Why?"
"I've been to jail. I don't like it and I don't want to go back."
"You're gonna have to deal with the charges at some point."
"I know."
"We'll encourage you to do it while you're here. Or at least start the process."
"I'll think about it."
"How have you been making a living?"
"Selling drugs."
"That will have to stop."
"I know."
"Have you ever been to treatment before?"
"No."
"Why?"
"I was never willing to go. I told my parents if they tried to put me in, I'd leave and they'd never see me again. They believe
me. He pauses and he sets down his pen. He looks me in the eye and I can feel that he's testing me, waiting for me to look away, so I don't. "Do you want to get sober?"
"I think so."
"You think so?"
"Yeah."
"Does that mean yes?"
"Means I think so."
"Why?"
"My life is hell.
has been held for too long. If I keep going, I'm gonna die. I'm not sure I want to be dead yet.
Are you willing to do whatever it takes?
I don't know. I'll ask again.
Are you willing to do whatever it takes?
I don't know.
I'll ask one more time. Are you willing to do whatever it takes?
I don't know. He stares at me, angry I won't give him the answers he wants to hear. I stare back.
If you're not willing to do whatever it takes, you might as well leave.
I would rather you not, but we can't help you until you're ready to help yourself.
Think about it, and we can talk more.
If you need anything, come find me.
I will.
I turn and I leave, and I walk toward the unit, and I go to the lecture hall where I sit and I listen to a man explain the relationship between a healthy diet and a sound mind. None of it makes any sense because of the drugs. And at a certain point, the lecture ends, and I stand up, and I leave, and I go back to the unit with the rest of the men. One of them looks like a movie star, and I think I talked to him, but I'm not sure. The afternoon and the early evening slide by in a lidded daze where the ability to think in any identifiable way disappears, and where every moment seems to be an eternity. Shortly after dinner, I climb into bed, and for the first time in several years, I am conscious of the fact that I'm going to sleep. I open my eyes. My roommates are sleeping, and the room is silent and calm and dark. I sit up and I run my fingers through my hair, and I look down at my pillow and I see that it's covered with blood. I touch my face and I realize that I'm bleeding. I stand and I slowly walk 10 steps to the bathroom, and I open the door and I go inside and I turn on the light. I recoil from the brightness, and I close my eyes, and as I wait for them to adjust, I step forward and I grab the edges of the sink. I open my eyes and I look up into the mirror, and for the first time in 5 days I see my own face. My lips are cut and cracked, and they are swollen to 3 times their normal size. On the left side of my cheek, a row of crusted, scabbed stitches hold a deep, inch-long gash together. My nose is bent and swollen beneath its bandage, and red lines stream from my nostrils. There are black and yellow bruises beneath both of my eyes. There is blood, both wet and dry, everywhere. I reach for a paper towel, and I wet it, and I begin softly wiping. Streaks crisscross my cheeks and scabs break, and I wince in pain and the towel becomes soaked. I throw it away and I reach for another. I do it again. I do it again. I do it again. I finish and I throw away the last towel and I wash my hands and I watch the red drift from my skin into the sink and down the drain. I turn off the water and I run my hands through my hair, and they're warm, and they feel good, and I try to look at myself again. I want to see my eyes. I want to look beneath the surface of the pale green and see what's inside of me, what's within me, what I'm hiding. I start to look up, but I turn away. I try to force myself, but I can't. I turn and I walk out of the bathroom and into the main room. Larry and Warren and John are all awake and in various stages of dressing. They say hello and I say hello and I walk back to my bed and I get inside of it. As I start to get comfortable, John walks over and stands in front of me.
What are you doing?
What's it look like I'm doing?
Going back to sleep?
Exactly.
You can't do that.
Why not?
We gotta go do our jobs.
What jobs?
We each got a job. We get up in the morning and we do our jobs.
Now?
Yeah.
I get out of bed and I follow John into the upper level of the unit. Roy sees me and he walks over to me and he takes me to the job board and he shows it to me and he explains how it works.
There's a job, there's your name.
The longer you're here, the easier the job. Since you just arrived, you have to clean the group toilets.
I ask him where the cleaning supplies are, and he shows me. As I collect them and I head toward the group toilets, he speaks.
Make sure they're clean.
I will.
Really clean.
I heard you. I find the group toilets, two bathrooms off the upper level that are used by the counselors, the men who don't feel like going to their rooms and visitors. They are small, with one toilet and one urinal each and one sink each. I go inside and I scrub the toilets and the urinals and the sinks. I take out the trash and replace the toilet paper. I mop the floor. It's not fun, but I've cleaned toilets before, so I don't mind. I finish the job and I return the supplies and I go back to my room and I go to the bathroom and I get sick. I haven't had a drink in 3 days and I haven't done coke in 5, so the sickness isn't as bad as normal, but I'm starting to feel sick in other ways. I close the lid of the toilet and I flush it and I sit down on the toilet seat and I stare at the wall. I wonder what is happening to me. I stand and I begin pacing back and forth across the length of the bathroom. I cross my arms and begin rubbing my body. I get cold, and a chill shoots up my spine. One second I want to cry, one second I want to kill, one second I want to die. I think about running, but there's nowhere to run, so I pace and I rub my body and I feel cold. Larry opens the door and tells me it's time for breakfast, so I leave and I follow him and Warren and John to the dining hall and I get in line and I get some food. I finish my oatmeal and I sit back in my chair. Ken walks over to my table and he sits down across from me.
You feeling all right?
I'm fine. Have you done any thinking about our conversation?
Yeah.
Any conclusions?
No.
Keep thinking, then.
I will.
You have an appointment this morning with the dentist.
All right.
I'll walk you up to the medical unit, and after you get your meds, I'll take you to a van. The driver will take you to your appointment, wait for you, and bring you back.
Okay.
Then, after you have lunch, we're going to have you take a test called the MMPI. It's a standard psych test that will give us some insight as to how we can help you.
Okay.
He stands.
You ready?
I grab my tray and I stand.
Yeah.
I put my tray away and we leave and we walk back to the medical unit. I get my pills and I take them and we go to the front entrance of the hospital where a white transportation van sits waiting. Ken gives me a jacket so I won't be cold. And we go outside and he slides open the side door of the van and he talks to the driver while I climb into the front seat and make myself comfortable. Ken says goodbye and I say goodbye and he shuts the door and the driver starts to drive and we pull away. I stare out the window at the drifting, frozen landscape. A mist from my breath collects itself on the glass and I begin to shiver.
You think we could get some heat in here?
The driver looks over at me.
You cold?
I return his look.
Goddamn right I'm cold.
He laughs.
It's coming, kid. Once the engine is warm, we'll be warm.
We stop at a lonely intersection where the light is red and the roads are empty and the wind sends scraps of paper and leaves whipping through the air. The driver looks ancient. He has messy white hair and a messy white beard and bright blue eyes. His skin looks as if it's made out of leather. He has thin forearms, but they look strong, and despite his age, he looks strong. He reaches out to shake my hand.
I'm Hank.
We shake hands.
I'm James.
What happened?
Don't exactly know.
You fucked up?
What's it look like?
Looks like that might be an understatement.
Looks are not deceiving.
We laugh, and the light turns green, and Hank continues driving, and we continue talking. He's from Massachusetts, where he spent most of his life as the captain of a commercial fishing boat. He was always a drinker, but after he retired, it got worse. He lost his house, his wife,
his family, his mind. He came here to get help, and after he got well, he decided to stay and see if he could help others. He's an easy talker, and as the ride drags on, I begin to think of him as a friend. We drive into a small town and turn onto what seems to be its main street. Hank pulls into a parking spot in front of a bait and tackle store, and we get out of the van and we walk to a small door next to the main entrance of the store. Hank opens the door, and we walk up a flight of stairs, and we go through another door, and we enter a small dark room with two couches, a sliding glass reception area, and a small table littered with magazines and children's books. Hank heads to the reception desk, and I walk over to one of the couches, and I sit down and I begin looking through the magazines. On the other couch, a woman sits with a young boy looking through a picture book about Babar the elephant. When I find a magazine and I lean back to start reading it, I can see the woman watching me out of the corner of her eye. She moves closer to the child and she puts her arm around him and she leans over and kisses his forehead. I know why she does it, and I don't blame her. And as I open my magazine, my heart breaks, and I hope that the little boy doesn't grow up to be anything like me. Hank comes back from the reception desk. They're going to take you right now. I set down the magazine and I stand. I'm scared, and Hank can see it. He puts his hand on my shoulder. He looks me straight in the eye. I know this is a podunk town, but these people know what they're doing, kid. You're going to be fine. I look away. A nurse calls my name and Hank moves his arm and I walk toward an open door where the nurse waits for me. Before I go in, I turn around and I see the woman and the child staring at me. I look to Hank, and he nods and I nod, and for a brief second I feel strong. Not strong enough to face myself, but strong enough to keep going. I walk through the door and the nurse shows me to a clean white room, and I sit down in a large dentist chair in the middle of the room, and the nurse leaves and I wait. A few seconds later, the dentist walks in. He's in his 40s, and he is tall, and he has dark hair and dark eyes and rough skin. Except for the white coat and the clipboard, he looks like a lumberjack. "You're James?" He pulls up a chair and sits in front of me. "Yes." "Dr. David Stevens. Nice to meet you." We shake hands. "You too." He puts on a pair of thin, clear latex gloves. "I got some info on you from the doc at the treatment center." He grabs a small flashlight from his pocket. "But I need to check you out more myself, see what exactly we've got going on here." He leans forward. "Can you open your mouth?" I open my mouth and he turns on the flashlight and he moves toward my face. "Can I lift your upper lip?" I nod yes, and he sets down the flashlight and he lifts my lip and he picks up a long, thin metal tool with a sharp end. "This might hurt." He touches the shards of my outer teeth with the end of the tool, and he starts pushing into some of the damaged areas of my gums. The pain is instant, sharp, and overwhelming. I want to close my mouth and make him stop, make the pain go away, but I don't do it. I close my eyes and ball my hands into fists and I squeeze. I can feel my lips quivering and I can taste blood, and when the dentist touches my teeth, they move. He finishes the exam and I hear him set the tool in a tray. I lean back and I open my eyes. "We need to do some x-rays, but from what I can see with my eyes, we're going to have to do some surgery." I squeeze my fists. Squeeze tight. The outer two teeth are broken, but the roots seem to be intact. My lips quiver. "We can cap those and you should be fine." I can taste the blood. "The front two, though, are dying." I run my tongue along my upper gum. "We're going to need to do root canals and build a bridge." I feel the remains of my teeth. Short, sharp shards of teeth. "It won't be pleasant, but unless you're comfortable without teeth, it's the only option. I nod.
I'll set up an appointment for you in a few days. The swelling in your lip should be gone by then, and we can't do this until it is.
I nod. Nice to meet you, James.
Nice to meet you, too.
He stands, and we shake hands, and he leaves. Another nurse comes in, and she washes out my mouth, and she stuffs it with cotton wads and plates, and she takes some x-rays. When she's finished, the cotton wads are covered in blood, and my mouth feels as if it's been brushed with sandpaper and slammed with a hammer. She tells me I can go, and she leaves, and I stand, and I walk back into the lobby.
Hank is sitting on one of the couches reading a magazine about the personal lives of movie stars, and I walk over and I sit down next to him, and he sets down the magazine and he looks at me.
How'd it go?
It was fine.
They gonna fix you up?
They say they are.
I'm gonna go find out when you gotta come back.
He stands and he walks to the reception area, and he talks to the receptionist, and he comes back, and we leave the office, and we get in the van and start driving back to the clinic. Hank tries to be friendly and talk to me, but I tell him my mouth hurts, so he leaves me alone. I stare out the window. I think about her. I think about the first time I saw her. I was 18 and at school, and I was sitting by myself under the orange and yellow of a fading October tree. I had a book in my hand, and I was reading, and for some reason I looked up. She was walking alone across the lawn of the school with an armful of papers. She tripped, and the papers fell to the ground, and as she bent over to get them, she looked around to see if anyone had noticed. She didn't see me, but as she scrambled to pick up her papers, I saw her. She didn't see me, but I saw her. The van pulls up to the entrance to the clinic, and Hank and I get out of the van, and I walk over to Hank, and I thank him for driving me and helping me. He tells me I look as if I could use a hug, and I laugh at him, and he ignores me and steps forward and puts his arm around me and hugs me. I warm at the simple pleasure of human contact. And for the first time in a long time, I actually feel good. It makes me uncomfortable, so I pull away and I say goodbye and I thank him again and I walk back into the clinic. The receptionist tells me it's lunchtime, so I go to the dining hall and I get in line and I get a bowl of soup and a glass of water. And I find an empty table and I sit down by myself and I do the best I can to force some food past the bloody wreckage of my mouth.
Hey, kid.
I look up. A man stands across from me. He's about 50, medium height, medium build. He has thick brown hair that is thinning on top and a weathered face that looks as if it has taken a few punches. He's wearing a bright blue and yellow silk Hawaiian shirt, small round silver glasses, and a huge gold Rolex. He stares at me. He sets his tray down. He looks pissed.
Remember me?
No.
You've been walking around the last 2 days calling me Gene Hackman. Now, I know they got you doped up on that detox shit, but I'm not Gene Hackman. I've never been Gene Hackman. I'll never be Gene Hackman. And if you call me Gene fucking Hackman again, we're gonna have a big fucking problem.
I laugh.
Something funny?
I laugh again. He looks like Gene Hackman.
You think this is funny, you little fuck?
I stare at him and I smile. I have no teeth, and the thought makes me smile more.
You think this is fucking funny?
I stare at him. He has hard, angry, violent eyes. I understand his eyes, and I know how to deal with them. This is familiar territory. I stand and my smile disappears. I stare at the man and the room becomes quiet. I speak.
I don't know you. I don't remember ever seeing you, I don't remember ever speaking to you, and I certainly don't remember ever calling you Gene Hackman. But if I did, yeah, I think it's funny. I can feel that most of the people in the dining room are watching us. My heartbeat increases, and the man stares at me, and his eyes are hard, angry, and violent. I know I'm in no shape for this, but I don't care. I feel myself getting ready. I tense up, clench my jaw, stare straight ahead, eyes fixed, focused, and unblinking. If you're gonna force me to beat your ass, old man, we might as well get on with it. He's shocked. Not scared or unwilling, just shocked. I stare straight ahead.
What did you just say?
Eyes fixed, focused, and unblinking. I said, if you're gonna force me to beat your ass, we might as well get on with it.
What's your name, kid?
James.
James? I'm Leonard.
He smiles.
I don't know if you're the stupidest fuck I ever met or the bravest, but if you answer one question for me, I'll consider letting that last remark slide.
What's the question, Leonard?
Are you fucked up, James?
Yeah, Leonard, I'm fucked up. I'm fucked up real bad.
Good, 'cause I'm fucked up too. I like fucked up people, and I try to associate with them as much as I can. Why don't we sit and have lunch together, see if we can forget about our differences and become friends? I could use a friend in here.
All right.